Hello there, very pleasant good day. This is Trending Now with, with Josh Arnold. I'm Rick Moore, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. Program we try to run on most Fridays here at 10 a.m. And for some reason, I'm getting really confused now with the status of live streaming audio and podcast, because this is not a podcast, and I'm not exactly sure what a podcast is.
Well, I think a number of podcasts may be pre-taped, and you log on and listen to something that's already recorded, but it could be live, I suppose.
Well, see, I don't understand. Yeah. Because what we do is we do this live, and then we put the recording up there, and it's still not a podcast. Or maybe it is. I don't know. I have to check it out. Maybe I'll Google it and see what Google says, right? Because we've been doing this for, we haven't done this program. How many?
I've been doing this with you for 7 years.
No way.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, we started broadcasting in 2005, so we've been doing this for a while. And
it
was called internet broadcasting at that time. Now it's called, I don't know, live streaming and all this. Anyway, what do we have lined up for this morning?
Well, we have a candidate for the candidate for the Salem Ward 2 City Council. Christine Maduri will be our first guest, and then our second guest is Sheila Renee Parker, who is a
Sheila Renee who?
Parker, P-A-R-K.
Oh, okay.
Parker. Yeah, my eyes are different. You know, I grew up in whatever.
Haka.
Writer, artist, Haka. Empath, and an expert on all things paranormal. She's a blog, and she's a popular. Engaged in popular speaking engagements, and she has a new novel out, The Spirit Within is a Spirit Within, and it's available on Amazon.
Looking forward to it. This time of year, perfect. All right. So we will come back with Josh's guests. You're listening to MSO News Sports, and of course, I can't find my music. I don't know where it went. It's way up there. So this is Trending Now. We'll be right back.
Ever wish that help with your business was as nearby as your next-door neighbor? At Cape Ann Savings Bank, we're the folks who have helped our neighbors build prosperous communities since 1846. And we invite you to give us a call, discuss your vision, and learn how we can help you grow your business. We're here for you. You have questions. We have answers. Just give us a call, 888-283-CASB, or visit capeannsavingsbank.com. Member FDIC, DIF, Equal Housing Lender.
Gloucester's Walter Wilkins Insurance Agency is teaming up with Columbia Insurance to deliver a full line of products, personal home and auto policies, as well as a full line of commercial coverage for business owners, including commercial property and commercial vehicle coverage. Wilkins partners with respected companies such as Plymouth Rock, Quincy Mutual, Commerce, and Safeco. For City of Gloucester employees, there are discounts on auto and home policies. Wilkins Insurance is located at 186 Main Street, Gloucester, now partnering with Columbia Insurance, serving the North Shore.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold, and our first guest is Christine Maduri, who is a candidate for Ward 2 City Councilor in Salem. Christine, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Josh, for having me.
Well, we usually start out and ask our guests to give us a 3 or 4, maybe 5-minute bio, so why don't we do that, and then we can get us some questions about your campaign and the election.
Sure. So my name is Christine Maduri, and I moved to the North Shore about 6 or 7 years ago. I started out living in Peabody in the house near downtown with my husband, but we visited Salem all the time because we were really drawn to the really dynamic downtown lifestyle and all the amenities it has to offer, and we always thought about why not just move to Salem? And housing affordability was a big issue for us. So about 2 years ago, when we found a home that we could afford in downtown Salem, we thought it was now or never. We got to move to Salem and live in a place that we really loved. And since we moved here, I've been involved in the Salem Redevelopment Authority and using my skills and background in urban planning to work through that board. And I've enjoyed it very much, and during this time I feel that I could do a lot more for the city. I want to bring my skills to the city council, and that is why I'm running, and I hope that I could bring a lot of skills to the council, especially during a time where when our city is becoming more desirable and we need to be smart about managing our growth.
Great. One of my questions was going to be what motivated you to seek office, which you've kind of covered that. Tell me about your background in urban planning a little bit and how that might help you in a position as a city councilor or a ward councilor.
Absolutely. So as a urban planner, I worked in the public sector for about 5 years, and my area of focus were housing, economic development, and transportation. And those three areas are very important to Salem today. And I worked on a lot of affordable housing studies, and that's one of my top priorities for my campaign is to really make sure that we can keep our community character in place by providing the type of diverse housing options to house our diverse community members. So that's my main priority. And in terms of economic development, I've worked with cities and towns across the greater Boston region, kind of studying what makes their downtowns work and what makes the downtown not work. And I think those skills are very valuable, especially in a place like Salem, where we have a lot of businesses, but there are areas where we have challenges and opportunities, and my skills can definitely bring to the council a more practical lens, and I would like to put my skills to work.
Great. Now, Salem has an aging population that is supposed to increase from maybe 8,000 to 12,000 by the year 2030. Did I understand that right? And so there's a you know, I guess the good side of the equation is that so many good things are happening in Salem that there's an attraction to bring more people there, or more people are wanting to retire there, but that also creates a void or a demand for housing for people who are on a fixed income but have since retired.
Mm-hmm.
So,
absolutely true.
Okay, so that's all part of the equation for what the next and future city council agendas are going to have to deal with.
Yeah. So this is a trend that we're seeing not just in Salem but across the country. We are seeing baby boomers aging, and they are starting to look into how planning out their next phase of their life in terms of housing and the kind of places they would like to live in.
Sure.
While still staying in the community where they raised their children or grew up in. And going back to that affordable housing issue, that is the key to keeping everyone in place without displacing anyone. And I live in a townhouse in downtown Salem. All of my neighbors are empty nesters. They actually downsized from single-family homes in Salem because they couldn't afford to keep up the cost of maintaining a big house. And they were looking for a smaller unit like mine, and it took them a couple years before they could find a unit like ours. And so we are not providing the type of housing that can fit all across all life stages.
Sure.
And at the same time, we have the kind of the aging, the boomers aging, looking for smaller units of types of housing. And at the same time, Salem is really attractive to younger families and young professionals. And the single-family homes aren't being turned over because the aging population can't find the smaller units to move into and sell their bigger homes. So we're kind of stuck with this turnover issue, and then that puts a lot of pressure on our housing market because the inventory is just not there. So that's a real issue in Salem that I hope I can help with.
Great. Now, Sanctuary City has become an issue in Salem to some extent. And there are those who would say it's a non-issue. Nothing's really going to change in the way of what the city of Salem does. Where do you stand on the issue? What is your sense of what that issue is in relation to Salem?
I think the issue is that we have a proportion of our community that feels unsafe because of the overall political climate of our country. And they have very valid reasons for feeling unsafe. The Sanctuary for Peace ordinance only serves to make sure that these community members feel that they can be safe, that they can still have local services be given to them, whether it's through safety, public services like going to the library, calling your police, your fire officers, without feeling that they would be deported. So this ordinance is only going to be serving local services to our community members without asking for their documentation. And the ordinance doesn't change our policing practices as a result. We are doing everything we have done before. But having it an ordinance puts the power of law behind this practice that we already have, so that in future administrations that this practice can't be changed easily. And I think that's the most important part, is that if we are already doing this, then why not put the power of law behind it?
Yeah, I understood that.
We affirm our values.
I understood that it was the issue of complying was a function of I'm an advocate for children with special needs. One of the things that I do, and that's always been the club that an advocate could use when they're advocating for child with special needs. So, you run the risk of the federal government coming in and a class action suit in which you would end up losing your federal funding because you're not providing a free and appropriate education for this particular child. The federal government in Massachusetts, after we passed Proposition 2.5, it was supposedly no more unfunded mandates. The federal government has no such rule or law. They simply say, if you don't do what we tell you to do, we're going to withhold our federal funding. And that all blew up in that issue on immigration and with the new presidential administration. Now, what Salem has done historically is, if there's a felon or somebody accused of a crime that's residing in Salem and they're not a legal citizen, then the law enforcement has historically cooperated with state and federal agencies to secure that person. And that's what's been done, and nothing about that is going to be changed.
But what this ordinance does is it
takes it from being a practice to a policy or a guideline that someone can't just come in and turn the knob off and say, well, we're not going to do that anymore.
That is just not true. Nowhere in the ordinance does it say that the city of Salem will be breaking any federal laws.
No, I know that.
Not true, and that's been a myth.
Yeah.
And the ordinance will fully cooperate with federal authorities.
Yeah.
And if there is a criminal in Salem that is arrested, or we find a criminal, we will send them to authorities, whether they're documented or not.
Yeah. None of that is
breaking the law.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So I was trying to clarify that, but there's a myth about what the Sanctuary City was going to be, and there's a lot of different conversations. I was trying to help you clarify what's real and what's myth, but
yeah.
We'll move on. Mm-hmm. Recreational marijuana has become an issue in cities and towns up and down the North Shore, actually across the Commonwealth. And your sense of how that impacts cities from a standpoint of planning or zoning or permitting, anything you'd want to talk about on that?
Yeah, absolutely. So FILM voted about 60% in support of legalizing recreational marijuana. And in Massachusetts, cities and towns have local authority or local control over their permitting and their zoning. So us as a city, we have the power to be proactive in establishing a regulatory framework around this use, this new use that we're going to have in the city. And I've actually ran a couple of workshops in other cities and towns to address these concerns that, other municipalities are facing, especially having recreational marijuana retail establishments. And I think we need to think about how these shops, recreational marijuana shops, will impact us in terms of safety and in terms of the kind of customers it will bring to our city. But we also have to be very clear to separate it from medical use, because that's an entirely different space that it needs to be very clear and separate, because the medical use is serving patients who need it as medicine, whereas recreational marijuana should be considered as retail, and we should treat it as any other retail business, but designing and being proactive about how and where these businesses should be created in Salem. But again, it's a small business, and we don't want to hamper small businesses. And also, making sure that these stores don't have disproportionate impact on specific neighborhoods by looking at it very closely on whether we are concentrating any of these stores in specific neighborhoods.
Okay, great. Social media is a big thing these days. But it also has an impact on elections. It also has an impact on constituent services. I know that the mayor of Gloucester and the mayor of Salem both use social media extensively, whether it's to communicate road closings or police. Or the DPW might be fixing a water main on a particular street, or you know, weather emergencies, or any number of things. What is your take on how social media has crept its way into the political and governmental arenas? Do you use it for purposes of helping you get elected, and how would you see it being used when and if you get elected to Ward 2?
Yeah, so I think social media has, or even just the internet in general, has brought constituents and their elected officials closer together. And we've also seen a drastic change in behavior on how people consume information. A lot of the information is instant. So as an elected official, when I put myself on social media, the other end of the receiving end, the constituents feel that they need the response right away. And it's a balancing act to be responsive. And throughout my campaign, I have tried to be active on social media to let the voters understand where I stand on positions. So I see it as a really good way to present myself without having to rely on canvassing or meetings, because I also have to meet voters face-to-face. That is still very important to me, because a lot of people are not on social media. But then again, a large group of voters, the first place they go to seek information is social media. So that's very important to me, to kind of present my ideas and my positions out there. If I'm elected, I would continue to do that. But understanding that being on social media has more of an impact than just being a campaign where I'm out there just kind of creating the message, whereas being an elected official, I'm actually accountable to a lot of the actions that I will be doing for the constituents. So I would definitely think that the tool is more valuable as an elected official.
Great. Just flipping ahead. Tourism is a big industry for Salem, and at the same time, it creates its own sense of congestion. And what are your thoughts? Are there ways to create and broaden tourism in Salem? And how do you do so by limiting the runoff, or if you will, or the congestion, or some of the other impact issues that tourism brings to Salem or to any other community?
I think Salem does a really good job promoting ourselves, and we are somewhat a victim of our own success, because more and more people are coming to Salem each year during October, and more so during other times of the year. We are now a year-round city for tourism. I myself, living downtown, I see tourists all the time. I love the energy and the vibe during the busy season, but the quality of life does get compromised a little bit. And in terms of that, I think we need to really take that seriously, that we are a city where a lot of people will come to during October and other times of the year, and where are the gaps of dealing with quality of life issues, whether it's parking or trash or congestion? Where are those gaps that we are not addressing enough? Because we can't just keep on thinking we're a small city where people like to visit every once in a while. We need to take this seriously, and understand that there are residents who are living in the city after all the shops have closed and all the events are done. That's the first issue that I would like to address. And secondly, like I said, we do such a great job promoting Salem, but there are lots of other areas that we're not promoting about Salem enough. We really emphasize on our history associated with the witch trials, but we also need to promote other areas such as the maritime history and other areas that really bring Salem together holistically in terms of our culture and our character. And I think we need to do more in those areas.
Great. Well, I want to thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Certainly wish you the very best in your campaign, which election is, what, November 7th?
November 7th.
Great. Well, wish
you... Get out there and vote, everyone.
All right. Take care. Thank you again, Christine.
Thank you, Josh.
All right. Bye-bye.
Score early and often this fall with a low-rate residential loan from the Institution for Savings. The Institution for Savings has fantastic rates, low or no fees, great service, and prompt turnaround. Plus, we service our mortgages in-house, so help is always a local phone call away. For more information or to apply online 24/7, visit institutionforsavingsloans.com or call us at 978-462-2344. Institution for Savings, member FDIC and DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're thinking of replacing the windows in your home, you should look at the Anderson Woodwright double-hung insert window, which comes with rich wood interiors in oak, pine, or maple. Quite simply, Anderson is the most trusted window in America. That's why we've been selling them for 57 years. Please see the Anderson Woodwright windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Gloucester's Walter Wilkins Insurance Agency is teaming up with Columbia Insurance to deliver a full line of products, personal home and auto policies, as well as a full line of commercial coverage for business owners, including commercial property and commercial vehicle coverage. Wilkins partners with respected companies such as Plymouth Rock, Quincy Mutual, Commerce, and Safeco. For City of Gloucester employees, there are discounts on auto and home policies. Wilkins Insurance is located at 186 Main Street, Gloucester, now partnering with Columbia Insurance, serving the North Shore.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our next guest is Sheila Renee Parker, who's an expert on all things paranormal. Sheila, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Josh, for having me on here.
Well, we usually start out and ask folks to give us a 3 or 4 minute bio, so why don't you start there, and then we can get into some questions about your work.
Okay. Well, first off, you know, like you just said, my name is Sheila Renee Parker. I'm an author, artist, and empath. You know, my site is a paranormal site where everyone can, you know, it's an open site where everybody can share their paranormal experiences. If anyone has an experience they'd like to share openly, it's a non-judgmental site. I would love to have people come. It's SheilaRParker.wordpress.com. On that site, I also talk about my paranormal experiences, anomalies, you know, just paranormal abilities, like being a psychic, empath, all of those, you know, wonderful abilities that a lot of people are scared to talk about. And like I just said a minute ago, I'm an empath. I've been an empath all my life, of course. And I'm an artist. My art can be found at Fine Art America. People can, my different kinds of art. I dabble in different mediums with watercolors and photography. And I'm also an author. The Spirit Within is my novel, and it's available on Amazon.com. And I'm currently working on the sequel to that. My novel, The Spirit Within, is a paranormal romance, and here is a brief description of it. It's about a young lady named Cassandra Blakemore. She seems to have the life every girl her age, college, cute boyfriend, cool friends, and loving relatives, except that cute mechanic and live-in lover Raleigh Nichols is sinking into the bottle and hitting her. Kathy isn't going to take it, of course. This all-too-familiar story comes with a supernatural twist that will delight every reader. Now, that little bio was from my novel, The Spirit Within. That's the bio that everybody will find on Amazon. It's also available as Kindle. And, you know, I've been a writer all my life. I'm a poet as well. I've been recognized by the International Who's Who in Poetry. And I've just, you know, writing is my passion, and I just love what I do.
Great, great. So you grew up with some abilities to channel in on other people's energy, other people's thoughts or feelings or what have you. What was that like growing up? Were you frightened by it? Did you not know who you could say what to? Tell us about that.
Oh, absolutely. Growing up as an empath was not an easy task because when I was younger, I didn't know what the ability was. I was terrified because I was always around mixed emotions. I could pick up on people's feelings, and I thought they were my own. And unfortunately, growing up with this ability, not knowing what it was, I thought, you know, I was going crazy because I could go into a room being all, you know, feeling okay, but then I'd go into the next room, pick up on somebody's negative emotions, and all of a sudden it was a complete switch, you know, a mood change. And I didn't know what was going on. And for a while there, I was starting to question my own sanity until I got older. And then I finally realized, hey, you know, I got talking to other people and everything, and people were like, you know what? This is an ability that you have. And I'm like, an ability? What are you talking about? That just sounds crazy. But the more and more openly that I talked about it, the more comfortable I felt about it. And I was like, you know what, this actually makes 100%, you know, sense. And I finally learned through meditation and, you know, communicating with my spirit guides and everything on how to protect myself from people's negative energies and things like that. So that's been a huge help throughout the learning process throughout the years.
Great. You're engaged as a public speaker on these topics. Tell us about some of the things you share with those audiences and some of the things perhaps that they share with you.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. Actually, it's still a learning process for me because every time that I do a public speaking event, you know, it just makes me feel more and more comfortable talking to people openly because there are so many receptive individuals out there that are not just willing to share their stories but learn from us too, you know, because I do believe that, you know, we learn with each other on how to, you know, cope with our abilities. It's been really rewarding because not only do I get to share my experiences, I've found out through the years that I'm able to help others as well with their abilities because it helps them to open up with their situations and, you know, what they've got going on. And, you know, with my paranormal speaking events, I talk about reincarnation. I talk about, angelic speaking, you know, because I do have the ability that I, you know, I speak and communicate with angels and things like that as well. You know, there are psychic phenomena out there. You know, when I do my public speaking events, people will approach me and say that they've, you know, seen spirits around me and they can see angels around me. And I find that actually very comforting because I know that my, you know, my guides are always there with me, as I believe that everyone has. But I've met some pretty interesting people throughout the years. So I've met, you know, some people with private stories that they wouldn't necessarily talk, you know, about, and I've helped, you know, with my public speaking events, it's helped other people to come forward with their stories as well, and I find that very rewarding.
Great. Now, as you, there are some people who, as you say, believe in the topics that you've that we've talked about here, and there are those who don't.
Right.
What is? Tell us about. And you mentioned, you know, people, you thought you might have been nuts, or other people would think you're nuts because they don't, they're not a believer. Tell us about how you deal with that, how others have dealt with it.
Well, I mean, like, of course there are going to be skeptics out there and people who think, you know, oh, you're just making that up. Well, I just tell people, you know, you believe what you want, you know, because I know it's not what I... It's not something that I've made up or anything. I know within my heart what this is true and everything because I've lived with this all my life. And, I mean, it's really funny, though, because I know things that will happen, and I won't even say it. And then after something happens, I'm like, well, I knew that was going to happen. And then, you know, you just get a sense of knowing. And some people, sometimes I will verbalize things prior to them happening, and then when the event finally happens, people will look at me and they're like, how did you know that was going to happen? And I look at them and I kind of just like smirk and I'm like, I just did. Because, you know, there's no way that I can explain it to somebody.
There's no scientific thing. It just comes to you. And there's no...
Exactly.
There's no way to prove it, but it's exactly. For you, it's very real.
Exactly, exactly. And since, you know, sometimes, like, if I do verbalize it prior to whatever it is that's going to happen, that kind of shows people, hey, well, you know, she knows something. Because, like you said, there's no way that I could have proved it before.
So,
and then there are other times I just keep my mouth quiet.
All right, and let's talk about those for a minute. So you have a vision or you pick up on something relating to somebody and... Maybe it's in a circle of people you know, or it could even be someone in a circle of people you don't know, but have some connection to. And you sense that, oh, they're going to get into a car accident, or, oh, they're going to something else. And you don't say anything because you don't know if it's real or not. You don't know if it's going to come true. And you, and then they go get in an accident. How do you deal with post-event in which you saw it? Do you own a piece of that? Do you feel as though you own a piece of that and that you should have intervened in some way? And how often does it happen where the outcome, where the vision and the outcome are different?
Well, I mean, luckily it doesn't happen a whole lot, thank goodness, but like you're talking about, a lot of times my visions will come in dreams, and they will be reoccurring dreams, and I don't mean every single night after night. I mean throughout the course of several months. It'll finally come, you know, when it finally happens, that's when the dreams stop, and that's how I know that they're visions. But it's hard, because, I mean, you really just can't just come forward with somebody and say, hey, you know, I know that this is going to happen, because, I mean, luckily I've never foreseen a car accident or anything like that, thank goodness, because I don't know how I would have dealt with that one. But, you know, my main thing is I have to, and anybody with any kind of a special ability, we have to acknowledge the fact that we cannot sit there and take the weight of the world on our shoulders, because if we did, that would bring us down to, you know, a horrible level. We have to accept things for what they are. I mean, if you feel the need to come forward and say something, then of course, then, you know, by all means, you have to follow your gut instinct. Now, with me, I've had situations where, you know, I would say something, but if I know for a fact that the person is going to think I'm just completely nuts,
I won't say anything at all, regardless of how things, I know that sounds horrible, but luckily I've never had to be faced with a life or death situation as far as the vision goes, so I feel very fortunate with that. Usually the visions that I have are usually just like basic, goofy little, you know, trivial things. So, I mean, like I said, my visions have never been too intense or anything, so thank goodness for that. I'm blessed with that because I'm not really sure why I have it, and I'm okay with that.
So, your website. Tell us a little bit about that, and then we could talk a little bit about your novel.
Yeah. My website is actually, like I was saying, is SheilaRParker.wordpress.com. I make weekly publications on it, sometimes more, sometimes less, but I openly talk about the paranormal. I conduct interviews with some of the really fascinating individuals on there as well. It's an open site for people to come and share their paranormal experiences. I've had it for about 3.5 years now, and I really enjoy doing it. And like I said, you know, I share my paranormal experiences on there. I share a lot of my poems on there because I'm a poet as well. And I just love the interaction because I invite other writers to come on and share with us and, you know, everything. I love the interaction that I get from everyone. I've met so many amazing people. And if anyone ever has any questions, there is a page on there. This is Contact Sheila Renee Parker. I openly welcome anyone and everyone to reach out to me if they, you know, for any questions or anything. And actually, to go there as well, you can get Contact Sheila Renee Parker, and that's how you can find my novel, you know, get a signed copy of my novel, The Spirit Within. It's just by contacting me through that.
Sheila, my name is Rick Moore. This is my website, and I sort of engineer this program for Josh. And nice to meet you. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing well. It's nice to meet you as well.
Well, it's very interesting to listen because let me start off by saying I'm a math teacher, I'm an amateur astronomer, and I'm a skeptic. But having said that, there's a favorite film of mine. I also teach teachers at Endicott College, and I teach a course called When the Oxygen Masks Drop Down, Put Yours On First. And the premise of that course comes from Dr. Wayne Dyer, I'm sure you're familiar with him on PBS,
yep.
In creating your own reality. And what I find fascinating is that this little movie called What the Bleep Do We Know gets a hold of quantum physicists who are verifying what you're talking about. And they do it in such a way that I'm thinking, okay, this is nice. Science is getting into this stuff. And one of the things they really harp on is the fact that the brain processes 400 billion bits of information per second. And naturally, our consciousness has to filter most of that out. But in creating your own reality, you know, it gets into the fact that, okay, belief... And Dr. Wayne Dyer has a great expression, I have to see it to believe it. He says you have to believe it to see it. And I'm wondering if you have seen any of those studies, or if you've seen any movies like that, or if you've heard of the Create Your Own Reality, because it seems as though that those 400 billion bits of information, maybe you're processing more than a couple of thousand a second like the rest of us do.
Oh, well, you know, I do believe that we are the creators of our own reality. A lot of people, you know, believe in destiny and all. Destiny may exist for some people. I don't actually believe in destiny. I believe that we create our own, if that makes sense. I don't believe that we should sit back and wait for, you know, because it's there for it to happen. I don't think things are going to happen for us unless we create it, if that makes sense. So, I mean, you know, you've got to definitely go out there and make it happen. So, yeah, I mean, we create our own reality. I'm a firm believer on that.
But what I'm talking about is, for example, I've worked with this and it works for me. Something happens in my life that is very negative and it seems overwhelming and it's out of my control. But from reading about this, I can say to myself, okay, you know what? It's going to be okay. Things are going to work out. And once I cross that threshold from saying it to actually believing it, then by God, something good happens. And whatever it was that I couldn't control in a negative fashion goes away. And in a sense, it seems like that's what you're involved with. You see things. You see, there. You know, quantum physics says there are just ultimate possibilities, and they're all out there until you look at it. And it seems to me that that's what you do. You're able to see certain things and grab a hold of those.
Right, right. Well, I mean, that's the truth, though, because, I mean, you know, things will happen, and like you're saying, negative things will happen, but then as time goes on, you know, there are positive outcomes that happen. And, I mean, do we need to sit back and wait for life to happen? I mean, you know, like what you're saying, you know, you just, I don't know, I mean, grab life and, you know, just go for it. And, you know, I mean, I haven't seen a lot of the documentaries like what you're talking about, with, but I am familiar with Wayne Dyer's work and stuff and all of, you know, what he's got to say. I mean, I would love to do some more research on the subject and, you know, maybe chat with you more about it later on. I think that would be really fascinating.
Okay, let me just get to one more thing. I know people who have empathic abilities, and I think that is one of the coolest things that you can possibly have. How do you work with being an empath? Because does it sometimes get overwhelming and you just sort of have to take a breath and walk the beach or something like that?
Well, actually, that is true, though, because it does get a bit overwhelming and everything, especially if I'm in big crowds. Because if I'm in a big crowd, I feel a huge amount of different types of energy. And it sounds really weird, but it kind of gets to my core, you know, like where my abdominal area is, and it gets really heavy. And sometimes I just have to kind of walk away from it. And like you said, you know, maybe go for a walk on the beach. Or, you know, one of my favorite places, I only live like 15 minutes from, I live 20 minutes from the beach, but like 10, 15 minutes from a river. And so I have to be near water. It just makes me feel really comfortable and just the flow of the energy and everything. But though, going to places like that help me to relax and to just kind of wash away any kind of residual, you know, extra energy from being around large crowds and everything. So, you know, that is it toxic? It's just very weighed down being an empath and everything. But we have to, as empaths, it's very important to get to, you know, a state of mind to where you can isolate yourself for just a few moments every single day to help cleanse the mind and keep everything pure.
And how do you, I mean, you have to, I'm guessing you have to create some level of separation between your emotions and your psyche and your and what's in these thoughts and energies that come into your mind, so that you don't own what you see or feel, even if it has a bad outcome.
Right. Well, I mean, you can't necessarily, just like I was saying a little while ago, you know, you can't own every single thing. I mean, you can't take the weight of the world, you know, on your shoulders, because if you do, then, I mean, I've known some empaths that felt, and actually when I was younger, I felt like I was supposed to take the weight of the world on my shoulders. You can't do that. It's mentally toxic. It's mentally draining. You can't do it. There are lots of situations out there where there are energy vampires that will hook onto somebody. And what I mean by an energy vampire, be it like with the paranormal, like some kind of an entity, or actually humans, I mean, that will sit there and just latch onto you and suck you for all that you are as far as energy goes, because, you know, with their negative energy. And being an empath, it's hard to get away from situations like that, because a lot of times we as empaths, we want to be able to help that individual or individuals. But it's hard to sit there and say, no, I'm not going to do this. And mentally we have to separate ourselves and, you know, just to get away, because we can't take on the weight of the world ourselves, because it's too much. And I mean, through meditation and, you know, getting to know my spirit guides and everything, that's helped me a whole lot.
Great. Tell us about the novel. What got you thinking in that particular area, and without, you know, giving away all of the secrets that people are going to want to get when they read it. Tell us what you can about the novel.
Okay. Well, it is a paranormal romance, and it was my first novel written, and because prior to that I was a poet. Well, I still am a poet, but I mean, as far as writing my novels, The Spirit Within is my first one, and I am currently working on the sequel. Now, the first one is about a young lady named Cassandra Blakemore, like I was saying. She's got the really, you know, idealistic life. She's a college student. She's, you know, a young kid. She's learning everything that she can about art. She loves everything. And, you know, she's living on her own with her boyfriend. And, you know, she's doing what she can. And then next thing you know, her boyfriend turns out to be this really abusive, alcoholic person who's just turned into a monster. And she sees things through visions with psychic abilities and telekinesis. She has these other abilities. And she finally finds the strength after several horrible instances that happen to overcome those, you know, nightmares that she's finally realized, and she's found the strength to move on. And all the while, she's finding out more about her supernatural background that she didn't even know that emerged until just recently, you know, according to the story. So this is a story about empowerment, and, you know, it's just waking up to a whole new you, and, you know, as far as her character goes. And I'm working on the sequel, like I said. The sequel is going to be more diverse with abilities, and it's going to go delve more into her background and a lot more paranormal aspect, because the first novel was just a touch on a lot of paranormal things with her, because, again, she's awakening, you know, self-discovery. And the sequel is going to be more in-depth and with all of the supernatural abilities, more romance. It's going to be a lot heavier with all of that. And hopefully, you know, like a lot of people have been asking me, when's the release going to be? And hopefully within the, you know, 6 months to 8 months, hopefully. So I'm projecting that, you know, the positive energy for that to happen. So I'm going to try my best to make that happen as soon as I can.
What are some of the other kinds of energies or gifts of people that you encounter? You mentioned past lives and so forth, people who are psychics. Tell us about some of the people you've encountered who are skilled or blessed or with those abilities.
Well, I've met some really fascinating people, like I was saying. You know, I've met some really awesome paranormal investigators who have been in the field for, you know, decades, and they're psychics or, you know, empaths. And what they say, you know, it's amazing, because with me being an empath and talking to other ones, you know, we all have our different ways of being, because it's like no two snowflakes are alike, you know. And I've, you know, talked with people who can see spirits and everything. I don't have that ability. I can't see a spirit. And I think it's fascinating when I talk with people who can see ghosts and see spirits, and they can say, oh, yeah, you know, and they can describe them to a T. I find that extremely fascinating. And psychics, because I'm not a psychic. I can't just automatically, you know, just tell you, you know, verbatim detailed stuff. And I find it fascinating that, I mean, even though I'm an empath and I can tell you things, but as far as being a psychic goes, I mean, I know people that can come up to you and just immediately tell you verbatim what's on your mind, and like a mind reader kind of. And that's blown my mind, because I don't do that. I mean, I can't do that. I mean, it's fascinating to me to be able to speak with so many different people with so many different abilities. It's fascinating to me because there are so many diverse things in this world. I mean, I'm just constantly learning, and I love it.
There's a Hollywood's adaptation of or incorporation of some of these themes speaks to a spirit or a ghost, however you want to characterize it, as drawing through into the world almost as though they have unfinished business, or there is a resolve of something that they didn't get right, or they didn't master, or they didn't fix before they died. So their reemergence, that energy field that allows them to reemerge, is to fix that dilemma or that problem. Do you see that in real life? As opposed, I mean, is that just Hollywood's version, or does that really happen? And what kinds of people have you run into that had stories where the spirit was coming back? I mean, I shared a story with you offline about, you know, a guest we had with a paranormal investigator who had shared a story about someone coming back to resolve something for a relative. What are some of the things that you may have encountered?
Well, I mean, that is true, though. I mean, of course, you know, Hollywood's going to always put their little twist on things, you know, for ratings and what have you. But, you know, I do believe that, you know, often our loved ones, or, you know, the spirits that have passed, you know, the dead that have passed on, they do stay behind for whatever unfinished business that they have. Or, you know, maybe it's not necessarily, you know, I mean, like you and I were discussing, you know, offline the other night, you know, about what, you know, about that loved one. And they do. They will sit there and come back and stay with that individual until whatever the situation is resolved. Or sometimes I think they stay behind to just make sure that the loved one is okay. Like, from, you know, like if a past one that's passed on, you know, keeps coming back just to make sure that their life, you know, their spouse, the one that's living or something, is okay, you know. And I don't know, I think sometimes they just want to stay behind because of a comforting feeling, if that makes sense. Because a lot of times when people pass on, they're not ready to pass on for whatever reason. A lot of times they may not want to go into the light or whatever because they're afraid of things. They don't know what's really going to go on behind the light, too. So if they cross over. So I think a lot of times they may stay behind due to fear. And, you know, because they're not ready to make that next step, even if they are aware that they just died. I mean, there can be so many different answers, you know, to why one spirit, you know, has decided to stay behind. It could be to relay a message. It could be to actually solve their own murder, if that's the case. It could be, you know, so many different reasons, you know. I mean, you know, I think, you know, with each spirit, there would be a different story to reason why they stayed behind.
Great. We've got just a couple of minutes left. Any last-minute thoughts to share with us?
Oh, yeah. You know, like I always tell people, you know, always be open and be true to yourself. Never hide who you are, you know. It took me many, many years to finally come to terms with my abilities, to come to terms with who I am, because growing up, you know, in the South and everything, I was always afraid to openly talk about my gifts as far as being, you know, an empath and being able to speak to, you know, angels and things like that, because if I had openly spoke about that when I was younger, I would have been viewed as being crazy and everything. And now that I'm older, if you want to call me crazy, I'm okay with that, because I've actually finally learned to accept who I am. And I honestly cannot be any happier with, you know, what I've done with my path that I've chosen in life. So I highly recommend anyone and everyone to finally, you know, to just embrace who you are and love who you are, you know, and always have a positive mindset, because I promise you, with positive vibes, there can be so much amazing things that can happen. And always be positive about yourself. You know, it's, you know, everything happens for a reason. I do believe that. But, you know, we all have the abilities. We're all unique. You know, just embrace who you are and love yourself.
Great. And you said you were brought up in the South, but you were actually born in Massachusetts, right?
I was born in Brockton, Massachusetts. Yeah.
And then, and you come up this way and visit relatives every once in a while.
I haven't been in many years, but I know, and last time I was up there, I was actually 11 years old, so, but we used to go up there a lot when I was a little girl. I loved it. Got some amazing family up there.
Great. Well, I want to thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold and sharing all of our all of your stories and your website, and, of course, the novel that you wrote that's available on Amazon.
Yep. Thank you so much, guys, for having me on. I enjoyed it.
Great.
Thanks.
Care now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, let's shift gears a little bit here, young man. You have a couple of businesses going, and maybe we should talk to you a little bit. I tried to get you on Connections a couple of weeks ago, but it just kind of fell through. And tell me about what you are offering in this political season and how that's going, and maybe some of the things that are entailed.
Well, we've taken a look at politics from a different angle, and that is that if you build a profile, and that's what I've been doing essentially of state reps starting out with Essex and Middlesex County in Massachusetts, what are the goods and services they procure to get elected or get reelected? How much money do they have to raise? How do they raise it? And where do they spend it? And if you can present kind of a one-stop shop where they can buy those goods and services, there would be economies of scale, number one. Number two, they're going to get a bigger bang for the buck. And three, it's going to approach a marketplace that is not organized. I don't think that that 18 state representatives in Essex County get together and say, "All right, where are we going to buy our signs this year? How much money do we want to spend on print media? How much money do we want to spend on photographers?" They just do it, And our sense is reach out to the companies or people that do social media, that do photography, that do printing or sign making or radio advertising, and define those markets, and then, you know, create a sales force to them to service those markets. Very different concept, but it also gets into, I mean, because when you get into the politics, printing, for example, if you're a Democrat, you might insist that the printing company have the union bug on it. If you're Republican, that probably isn't as big a deal. But we looked at it and said, what if we created a collaborative of printers? My partner, David Gardner, and I, David's a printer, Oates Boyd's direct in Stoneham, but there are three or four or five printing companies north of Boston, and the owners are all Rotarians. Well, we don't want to take business away from Rotarians, but we might be able to give them some business. So it might be that, you know, the Christina and Keith Harris in Rowley could refer business to us and get the union bucket and get a piece of David Slade in Cricket Press in Manchester. You know, is not a union shop, but could still service a candidate that needs the union bug by, you know, going through through us and so forth. So, looking at the political people running for office as a political marketplace, and in improving the quality and of the goods and services they need to get elected and reelected.
So how do people get a hold of you if anybody's thinking? Now, this is for statewide.
It's a city and state election, so we'll be working, doing stuff every year, because every year is an election for somebody. Mm-hmm. But we're also bringing in, how do we create products, new products? So if we download the information on who's made contributions by way of political, by zip code, by for people running for office or particular causes, we can use that data to send out a letter raising money for a particular candidate. We can also use demographic data obtained from cities and towns to target market the people who are the highest likelihood of voting in either a city or a state election. We can integrate that data with social media so that there's an easier get-out-the-vote operation on election day. These are all new products that we're developing, and they can write to Josh Arnold at josharnold@verizon.net. We also have a Facebook page, Arnold Gardner and Associates.
Okay, sounds good. Sounds interesting. And we have some future guests lined up for Trending Now on Fridays.
We do. We have a retired lieutenant colonel, United States Army, an attorney, graduate of Gloucester High School class of 1976, classmate of mine, and a defense contractor, a semi-retired defense contractor, Larry Costa, who's going to be a guest next week, Kathy O'Meara Clancy, a member of the Gloucester School Committee and candidate for re-election, will be a guest next week as well. And then we have Robin Organ of the Project Green Schools, who will be a guest on November 3rd, and Hallie Baker of Turtle Alley Candy will be a guest on November 3rd. She was trying to get her earlier in Halloween set. So we said,
Christmas is fine. That's fine. And I want our visitors to the website to take a look at yesterday's connections and listen to it. Some fascinating interviews. And one of them was with Heather Atwood of the Two Moms Midpod, and also, of course, of Food for Thought. But there's a video up there that she alluded to that I want you to take a look at, because she will be visiting this candidate who is out in Kentucky. She's a candidate for the seat that Mitch McConnell represents, but Jeff Sessions has left and so on. I think I may have that mixed up, but she does refer to Mitch McConnell. She's a former lieutenant colonel. She's a retired lieutenant colonel in the Marines and a fighter pilot. She was one of the first female fighter pilots and has aircraft carrier landings to her credit. But you should watch that video. It's about two and a half minutes long. and it's mind-boggling. That's on Connections from yesterday, speaking of lieutenant colonels.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that'll do it for now. Have a great weekend.
Yes, and we'll have some more guests for you next okay. few weeks. And
I'll be going through Salem tonight. We got football, Marblehead at hosting Danvers. That will be I will be reporting on Bill Newell's broadcast from Manning Field and Lynn, Salem at Lynn English tonight. And Marty Smith will be over at Linfield to be covering the Hamilton-Wenham-Linfield game that has title implications in the Cape Ann League. So tonight it's the battle for first place in the Northeastern Conference Tier 1. Bill Newell has a big broadcast from Salem at Lynn English, and Marty and I will be reporting on both of those games tonight. So that's all on MSO News Sports. Let's see, pregame probably around 6:45 or so, and lots of stuff coming up on the website today and tomorrow. On behalf of Josh Arnold, our producer and engineer Bill Propaska, I'm Rick Moore. Bye-bye.